This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 16th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Chris, you know, we have these new limits in Florida. I don't know if you heard about that yet.
Did they like get smaller? They shrink our limits?
No, they actually got bigger. I read this in a local magazine I picked up at my my local poker room, and it's amazing. It's great.
Wow.
But you know, I haven't got out to play much, and so when I do, it's been nice. But a couple weeks ago, we got a little horse game going at Derby Lane down the street with some friends of ours, and I just remember that I did not share what was one of the funnier things I've seen in poker this year that happened during this horse game, and I don't think I even told you this yet.
Okay.
So it's fresh for the show. So we're playing, of course it's horse. Actually, we got rid of Raz, so it was Hose. And we were playing limit hold'em, first round, right? I mean, we've been playing a while, but I mean, we're back on the hold'em round.
Right.
And we finished that up, and now we're on the Omaha round, right? Right.
Right.
And so the cards are dealt. And this kid who was not part of our group, which is great because, you know, I need to remind folks when six or seven of you go to a poker room together and all sit at the table and don't let anybody else sit at the table. The only one that wins is the casino, as we found out in L.A. at the Commerce. So it was good that we had some fresh blood in there to kind of hopefully give us some money to scoop up. But, so this kid gets his cards, and when the action's on him, he pops up out of his seat, Chris, and takes a couple steps back, and there happened to be a floor standing right behind him, right?
Right.
And so he whispers into the floor's ear. Something. Of course, he whispers, but can't hear, and I didn't have my miracle ear. You know, and so he's like, all right, cool. And he sits down, and he calls. I'm like, this is kind of odd, but, you know, whatever. You know, he didn't hold up the game that much. You know, whatever. So the hand goes all the way to the end. This kid is in. Our good friend Sam, you know, who runs Sarasota, flips his cards over. Rakes in a massive pot, right?
Uh-huh.
All the chips push that, and the kid flips over her hand, and he's like, aces cracked, baby!
Yeah, I knew it. I was coming. I knew it.
And stands up and woo! And then the dealer's like, man, it's Omaha. There's no aces cracked in Omaha. He's like, but I just asked the floor!
Oh,
the floor
no.
Turns around, and he's like, oh, man, I'm sorry, man. I thought you were still on the hold'em round. I didn't know you switched to Omaha. He's like, that's why I asked!
Oh, man.
So, of course, the whole table chuckles because, you know, it's not our money. But, man, I mean, what an unfortunate situation for everyone involved here. I mean, the poor floor thought he was answering the question. He didn't realize that the game had switched. The kid actually was trying to get the answer because he knew the game had switched and wanted to be sure that the aces crack wins a rack was good. And it was just a miscommunication, right? You know, just a little Three's Company action going on.
Three's Company. Mr. Furley's at the brush saying, did he say what I think he said?
Exactly, exactly. You know, and Larry's at the bar trying to pick up a chick. And so in the end, the floor is just like, he had to shrug his shoulders and goes, man, that's my bad. Sorry.
So,
no rack for the kid. Now, as I looked at the hand and the way it played out, I think he probably, the way I would have played, it only cost him maybe an extra bet. Because I think something like the board paired or something that was no low, and, you know, some pocket aces, I mean, you might see the river for that, or at least a turn. So it wasn't like the guy, unless he was going to fold preflop, but played because of it, which doesn't make any sense either. That, you know, I don't think he really was out much, but other than what he was hoping to win.
But now I really want to be privy to that conversation. Did the kid walk up to him and just say, hey, I got pocket aces. If they get cracked, do I going to rack? And then the guy said, yeah. You know, if the kid didn't say, hey, I'm playing Omaha 8 and I have pocket aces if they get cracked. You know what I mean? If he said that and the floor, you know, the floor said, yeah, you still win, then the floor should be responsible. But clearly this kid just went up to him and said, hey, I got pocket aces. Is it, you know, and not realizing the floor looked over and saw four cards or not, you know?
Yeah, and the floor's defense, too. I mean, I could defend everybody in this, but, you know, we're just now starting to get these mixed games going here in Florida. So, I mean, it's pretty much all hold 'em all the time. So, I mean, you don't have to – it's not one of those things where you have to stop and think. I'm like, I'll make sure this game is not switched yet. You know, even though he was kind of lurking around the table because he thought it was interesting that we actually got a hose game going. But, wow, I mean, the poor kid. And then the rest of the night, I mean, we're playing with all dealers too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just brutal. Just the stuff that's going, being said back and forth. And, you know, they're all friends and stuff too. And the kid took it well in the end. But the rest of the night, every time we had a question, we're like, hey, floor!
Yeah, I can imagine if I was at that table and they're playing stud and I got split aces and they, oh, look, my aces were cracked. I want my rack.
Oh, you know, the next guy sat down, he's like, oh, okay, so is this Omaha high-low? He's like, it depends who you ask.
Oh, man.
Oh, but easy come, easy go happened in Apes last night. At least it did for me. But it was a good night for you.
Yeah.
Maybe not such a good night for the overall nation, as unfortunately one of our most popular events, the No Limit Hold'em Rebuy event, is most popular because it's usually a dollar buy-in with dollar rebuys, and people just go sick crazy rebuying. Unfortunately, the programmer set it up incorrect. It was a $5 buy-in with $5 rebuys. We tried our best to get it switched in time, but our contact was on vacation, and I couldn't get through to anybody else. But to be honest, I was surprised at how many people we ended up getting. I really didn't think a lot of people would, you know, I know how much our nation reveres you, Chris, and your spending habits. And I didn't think that that many people would enter a $5 rebuy. But we had like 43 or something show up. We had more rebuys than entrants, which is always great, and then a lot of add-ons. So it would turn out to be a pretty decent prize pool in the end.
I got to tell you, you know, before the tournament started, I was like, man, do I really want to play this?
I knew that. You know, I was shocked.
I'm like, it's supposed to be a dollar and dollar rebuys. And I wasn't even going to do the dollar rebuy. I was just going to do the dollar and say, hey, if I did well, I did well. And I didn't even want to spend $2. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I got to spend $5.50 now. You know, and I'm thinking, no one else is going to play, you know. And now I'm like, woohoo, I'm so happy I played. I'm so happy that it was $5 because the freaking prize pool was huge. For like 40-something players, the prize pool was like $800 or something. It was sick. Not that much. It was like $600-700, but I couldn't believe it. I was excited. And it always happens, too. Whenever I'm – like when we play the main event, every year I seem to do pretty well in the main. Last year I was fourth, and I was like – do I really want to play a 20+2 or whatever? You know, like, and then I end up cashing. I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad I played the 20+. You know, I felt pretty good. It was a good night. Tell me that starting table we had was an absolutely unbelievable. If you were to pick everybody at that table and say one of these guys is going to make the final table tonight, I never, never would have thought it would be me.
well, we're in agreement on that, buddy. but no, yeah, you're right to my left. And then you had Rant on your left, right?
Yep.
Hef Mike, who has won about 37 bananas, was there. Poker Geek, who has won second place bananas in every event ever.
Yep.
was there. Who else was at our table?
Well, that right there is two players of the year, by the way.
That's right. That's right.
We also had Snuffy, the latest banana winner until last night. He was on your right. I mean, it was just – it was really a tough table. We had one empty seat, and then it was a really tough table. And I thought, oh, my God. And I got hit in the head with the deck in the first, like, 20 minutes. And that felt really good. And that's what let me, you know, play the way I played. So I was amazed at the table we had to start with. And every time somebody would join a table, they're like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Look at this table. They were not happy and they had to sit at that table. And believe me, I sympathized.
But somehow, you know, I did all right at that table.
Yeah.
And, you know, and partly I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Because, you know, I've been on this this run in Zips, you know, our other listener tournament that was only $1 last night. And, you know, I finished second 2 weeks ago and won last week. So I'm like, you know, I got to keep the streak going, right? So I entered it. It was triple draw, low ball. And so now I've got to play both tournaments, which I hate. I cannot do that.
Tough.
And particularly a triple draw low ball when you're trying to do draws and things.
Yeah.
And there actually was one hand when I had a real hand in the main tournament that I was trying to focus on, and the stupid other table kept bopping up because I was heads up, and I stood pat with two pair in my hand all the way to the river. And it was just tough. But despite all that, I still thought I played well. I got had one bad suck out, rebought once, and then got lucky with my aces. And when I say lucky with my aces, I got them all in against Hef Mike against, I don't know what he has, like Ace King or something, and two Broadway cards came, and I'm like, yep, here it comes. Here it comes. Wait a minute. It didn't come?
Yeah.
I actually won that pot? So that's what I pass for luck for me now, is not getting sucked out. And but then the hand that really crippled me and sent me out got a lot of buzz on our table, I think.
Yeah, it was just sick. And you know, before we get to that too, I just want to say that I was the one that felted you.
Yeah.
And I knocked out Hef Mike and I knocked out Snuffy. So it was a pretty good night. It was a good night, man. Not that I want to take any away from your stories or anything, but I wanted to make sure I got that in there. It was a pretty good night, man.
Yeah, you got my you know, sloppy what are there, Sid, but it was Rant that you know, took most of my chips.
Yeah.
And you know, the hand, it was interesting, I thought. It was after the rebuy period had ended, and add ons and stuff. So you know, we're playing for pinkies at this point. And there were two limpers, and I looked down at pocket tens. I think I was like on the hijack or button, one of the two. And, you know, there's only two ways to play that, I think. One, you know, since there's two limpers, just go ahead and limp and hope it doesn't get raised and set mine. Or put a significant raise in, try to take it down there, or at least isolate.
Yeah.
And since we were this late in the tournament, I didn't think it was worth set mining anymore, so I wouldn't, you know, play with the big boys now, right?
Right.
That was my thinking. So I made it, I believe, 5x and change. And, like, everybody calls. And flop comes queen, 10, queen, and I had pocket 10s, right? So I flop a boat. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, I was still playing the stupid little, you know, draw lowball thing. And I saw 1-10 come. I'm like, whoosh, all right, I got my set. And then when I got back to the table, I'm like, oh, I got better than my set. And so I ended up getting it all in, and Rant, of course, pocket queens. Flops quads.
In his life.
Flops quads.
That was just crazy, man.
It was 700 chips that, you know, you take from me a little later. Actually, I won an all-in with ace-10 right after that. But, all right, but we started discussing, and you thought I could get away from this hand, right?
Well, I don't want to ruin the show or anything, but what I typed in was, watch this. Tomorrow morning on the forum, everyone's going to say, oh, Scott could have got away from that. And I'm like, there's no way.
Okay.
It's a $5 tournament. But, I mean, maybe if you're playing in the main event, I can't remember what the turn and river was, Scott. So if there was a higher card on the turn than your 10s, maybe you can get away from it because the guy could have played queen jack or king queen or something. But I mean, it's a $5 rebuy tournament. I mean, there's no way you get away from that hand, be honest. But you do think you can get away from it now?
Well, I'm trying to remember now because I don't remember the particulars of how the turn and river finished. which is key to whether I could get away from it. I do remember that I pushed all in. I was the one that went pushed all in.
Right.
I don't remember if that was on the turn or the river. I want to say it was on the river. And if it was on the river, there really was probably no upside for me pushing all in.
Yeah.
Because I'm only going to get called by a better hand, right?
Yeah. I mean,
and because the queens were over my tens, I mean, he very likely could have had a queen, and regardless of what the turn and river are, outboated me.
Yeah.
And so I probably should have just checked behind if it was the river, saved my 1500 or something, and still had a fighting chance rather than trying to get greedy. But at that point, I mean, this is what separates the good players from the great players, and I'm not there yet. Is when you flop a hand like that, you, as Rand said in the chat, you go from licking your chops to WTF. But you flop a hand like that, and all of a sudden, all sense of the hand goes out of your head, and all you're thinking about is how many chips you're going to get.
Yep.
And that's wrong.
Yep.
That's bad.
You got to keep playing.
And so, you know, and there's a little Tinkerbell in my head that said, wait a minute, there's a queen. If he's still calling all these bets, he's got to have a queen. Which means he could have a higher boat. In fact, even I thought when he turned it over, I thought I could have been beaten by a higher boat. But, you know, quads, jeez, come on. but, yeah, so, I mean, again, I don't remember exactly how it finished, but there probably was an escape valve for me at some point.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. If it came something similar to, like, queen, and he could have had queen 10, you know, which I don't put Rent on that type of hand the way he plays in that situation when you... You did pop it, right, when he had two limpers, so he just smooth call with queens.
And he
right?
called queens, too, yeah. Which I thought was interesting because there were, you know, obviously two limpers left plus me, and I think the big blind left to act after. I think he was on the small blind. To be honest, after more I thought about it, I was just shocked he didn't raise preflop with that hand. I mean,
when you typed that in, cause I think you did type that into the chat, I was thinking that maybe he thought your raise would be enough to get the others out. Or
yeah.
Or that he was hoping someone would try to squeeze him, and then he would come over the top with his queen. So maybe he was thinking ahead and thinking your raise was enough or whatever. But, yeah, and I thought about my hand last week when I had the 9-8 in the hand of the week, and I flopped the boat, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get this guy's money? Yeah. And then he, you know, rivers me in the end. I wasn't thinking I possibly was beat there, and I was. Same with you. I mean, when you flop a boat, it's so hard to think anything but, here come the chips, you know. It's so difficult. And I just don't think you could have gotten away from that at that point.
Well, you know, enough about us. Let's congratulate our winner here, Nuance 613. And, you know, and this, while the banana, of course, is the highlight of his career, I'm sure. He did win a zipper a couple weeks ago. Beat me heads up. but he's all the way from downtown Canada. And, you know, he took the nanner and he called in not once but twice. I don't know whether are you going to put both calls on or just one?
I'll put them both on.
You'll put them both on. All right, let's listen to them.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Eric, a.k.a. Nuance, a.k.a. Cynical 8. I had to battle through Malky up at 4 a.m. in England, shoving all in every second hand, then a heads-up battle with What's Up Duck, but I finally won my first banana. Woohoo! Hey, this is Eric again. I just wanted to send a thanks to Blasman for pushing all in almost every hand, in the first few rounds, just so we could rebuy and get some chips on the table. Thanks, Blas.
Yeah, you know, this guy Blasman was playing last night, and he kept, like, talking to us, and I don't know who he was. Do you know who that guy is? I kept asking
him. Yeah, you know, he came up in my Skype chat, too, and I'm like, all right, well, he seems harmless. I'll respond. But no, I've never heard of this guy, at least not in the last couple of years.
Well, congratulations, Nuance. You know, you were on my left last night and were the biggest pain in my patootie ever. It was very difficult for me to get anything going with you on my left, knowing that, I mean, his stack was twice mine most of the night. But I did want to say that when it got down to five-handed, we were all pretty evenly stacked, like 40 to 50,000 chips. So we chopped the tournament.
Very cool.
Five-way chop, and we left $50 on top. For the eventual winner and the nanner and stuff. So he got the extra 50. And I just want to say, Mousy, valiant effort there to in England, playing at like 6:30 in the morning against us, staying up all night, basically not getting any sleep, actually knocked me out. Here I am thinking, okay, you know, Mousy's shoving with any two cards because now that we've chopped, he wants to go to bed. Shoved with king-queen. I call it pocket sixes. thinking, all right, all I got to do is dodge a king and a queen. And you ever have this moment, Scott, where when the flop comes, you're just looking for the cards you don't want to see,
right,
and you don't realize you flopped a set?
Yep.
So I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to have 85,000 chips here. If I win this hand, I'm going to be chip leader with four to go. I might actually win a banana. And I'm looking at the flop, and I'm like, okay, flop comes six, jack, ten. And I'm like, oh, my God, no king, no queen, no nine, no ace. No king. No, I'm saying this through my head, yeah, and I'm not realizing he can have a king or a queen all he wants. I flopped a set. I had no idea. Of course, the turn is a nine, giving him the straight, the nuts at the time. And I'm like, oh, I'm dead. Wait a minute. There's a six. Pair the board. It's like 1:30 in the morning, and I'm screaming, pair the board. My wife's like trying to sleep, you know. And, of course, the board didn't pair, and I was out. But I was very happy, and I think I told you before the show, and I really needed this, man. I needed a good night at poker and a good cash, and it was nice. It was nice to get that cash and really basically split the tournament. We chopped the tournament and then just played for the banana. So I felt good about it.
Well, great. Our next event's coming up, and don't worry, I've already checked. They're already correct on PokerStars' site. The next banana event will be Saturday, July 31st at noon Eastern. The game will be Limit Deuce to 7 Triple Draw. A great game to multi-table with, by the way.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can win your way in the top 10 people in our next free roll, which will be Saturday, noon Eastern on July 24th. We'll get 10 seats into that event. So check it out, and we'll see who wins the next nanner.
One final note on the Apes event last night. Mike Faso made the final table.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
But he bubble plus one holding the Cosenza. No, he wasn't hugging me, hoping that he didn't go out. No, he had ace 10 and got called by ace queen and went out. But he played well. He had a couple of hands early on that were just monsters. He'd have like a set of eights and somebody with ace king and the flop to king. Got them to commit all their chips, doubled there. And then, like, I don't know, there was another hand where he, like, made quads. He had pocket 10s versus pocket jacks, and he flopped a 10. I mean, he was blessed. I typed that into the chat. I was like, I think Faso went to church before Apes tonight because he's definitely blessed. But it was great having Mike around and at the final table, and we had a lot of fun. So, but, yeah, it was a great event. And, hey, you know, one of the best parts about the event is talking to the fans and the listeners and just chatting with them and stuff and getting feedback from them. And this week, boy, it was remarkable how many people wrote into us this week to talk to us about our shows and stuff. We got so much to talk about.
Yeah, and actually some of the stuff I've been holding for a while because we've had so much already to talk about. So it's a little dated, but it's interesting stuff. I want to get it in.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We'll kick it off with Dave from Australia. And a couple weeks ago, we had this hand of the week. Real quickly, the hero is holding Queen Jack suited in a 1-3 cash game. And so Dave said he and his buddy, or mate, I guess, Australia, right?
Right, mate. Right, mate.
He and his mate were talking about this hand, and he thought there was a possible fibbing going on in this hand. He says in his hand, he said the villain mucked his cards only to reveal later that he was on a busted ace high flush draw. But he said, thinking about the hand, this seems unlikely, and I think the villain was lying.
That's why they call him a villain.
He said, in our view, people tend to fold hands that they either genuinely beat or are ashamed to show. In this case, there is no shame, arguably, chasing an ace high flush in the manner he did in a cash game. And so we really can't see him mucking a broken flush with ace high. What makes more sense to him, Chris, is that he's holding, say, 7-9 suited, also turned a straight flush draw, that figured by the river the 9 high wasn't going to cut it and mucked. And even then, there seems to be little shame in calling an up and down straight flush draw. So I think the muck was one of genuine defeat.
Well, you know, that's good to be thinking like that, too, to be thinking the story out. You know, and trying to figure out what the person has. Because if Dave was correct here, then, you know, then his reading ability on betting patterns and everything else is getting that much better and just proves that, you know, you have to think on a different level to really put people on hands. And you might be right. The villain might have been lying.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't put it past the villain.
Kind of reminds me of, you know, we were watching Big Brother last week, or last night. You know, it's my favorite summer show, and they got a saboteur this year, Chris.
Oh, no.
And everybody's walking around, oh, I think it's him, I think it's her, because he was, and I'm sitting there back there, I'm like, you know, this is Big Brother. You know, I'm not putting anything past Big Brother. These people are just kind of be like lemmings. And it's the same thing here, you know, you gotta look, yeah, look behind the trees. Might be something else there. All right, well, somebody that did go to church before, Apes, I hope, Father Paul.
He's one of my favorite guests and listeners, because I have over the phone tried to teach Father Paul how to bowl. And so if there is a heaven, I'm going. Just so you know, if there is a heaven, because of the conversations we've had and the email exchanges, I'm going. So
it'll probably just be duck pin bowling, though.
Hey, that's okay. I'll take it.
But our favorite parent head wrote in a little bit of article, because, you know, he's a fellow Midwesterner, Chris.
Yeah.
And you were talking about this was back from our Tunica trip, when you go on your little mini rant about the did I get you dealer?
Yeah.
And how you're just knowing about it. But so he wrote in to say, please consider the passive-aggressive Midwestern way of calling someone out without calling them out. Say you have a cheapo guy at the table. All right, I'm going to say, Chris, you're the cheapo guy.
I'm always the cheapo guy, all but right. I tip.
He says, every card room has this tightwad who refuses to tip, I imagine. One large individual is notorious at Canterbury up there in Mississippi where he plays. He says, dealers can't say anything.
He has to play in Mississippi, Minnesota.
Minnesota. You know, they're all the M's are the same. It could be Missouri. It could be Massachusetts, all right? Jeez. He says, dealers can't say anything, and obviously the house could care less. They get their rake, but those of us in Minnesota rarely confront people. We talk about them in hushed tones, ask someone else to say something, or just ignore the problem and hopes it will go away. This applies to the poker table as well. So he suggests, how about saying, did I get you there, as a reminder to the other person that they should tip without actually having to make the effort to say anything that might cause conflict, such as, why are you so cheap? Some validity there. I know, I mean, again, I'm a Midwesterner, so I get this. I know some people outside Midwestern, like, you know, those of you born in the Northeast, that have no problems telling people what you think. We'll see, but, you know, this is the kind of that Midwestern charm.
I just can't believe that people still need to be patted on the back when they, you know, because they tip the dealer, you know. It's just ridiculous.
Yes, but what he's saying is they're not trying to get patted on their back. They're trying to remind that jerkwad in seat 7 that that the standard way of participating in a poker game is to tip the dealer.
Yeah.
And by verbalizing it, the easier way would be to say, hey, tightwad, you're supposed to tip.
Well, let me tell you what. If Father Paul shows up with his collar on to the poker room, he could say whatever he wants. He could go, hey, buddy. Pony up a buck. Why are you so cheap? He's not going to get hit.
Well, you know, and, you know, I played a little Omaha Live this week, too, and it just reinforced the fact that Omaha players are the biggest tightwads out there.
Oh, yeah, because they're splitting pots.
There's a guy that just, he did not tip. At one point, he won a massive scoop pot. There you go. I'm back to even. Toss a dealer dollar. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Every other pot, though, he just stacked his chips and talked about how much he won. Wanted to punch him. But I'm a Midwesterner, so I didn't.
All right, well, Don from Michigan, or is it Minnesota,
or is it
Mississippi, or Missouri? He goes by Duck
Malaysia.
Butt, by the way. Malaysia. It says Duck Butt here. I don't know.
Yeah, and I asked him, can I call you Duck Butt? And he said, sure. So we're just going to call him Duck Butt.
All right, so Duck Butt says that we mentioned shorthanded play, and how we think there should be a shorthanded book. He said, this book focuses on No Limit Hold'em, and he recommends it. It's called Killer Poker Shorthanded by John Vorhaus and Tony Guerrera. And I think I may have known about that book, because that's part of the whole killer strategy, right? Like Kill Phil and all that.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
I think it is. So I think I knew about that, but, you know, I was too also thinking that like a super system type shorthanded book would be good for all the games. Because, again, I just have no idea if I should be playing like ace, queen, 3, and stud, 8, you know, but, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so that's a good book that's out there if you're talking about shorthanded No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah, and, of course, if you are from Michigan, too, I had no problem calling you a butt.
Oh, my God.
But you know, we were playing shorthanded in the deuce of seven last night too, and I was hyper aggressive. That's where I kind of stacked up there.
So, yeah.
You know, I guess if there's a book out there, I mean, it goes without saying you have to be more aggressive. But I think your question was more, you know, how aggressive or what hands are you aggressive with?
Yeah, and what scenarios and, you know, and I'm sure if somebody wants to write one that you could probably write the deuce of seven shorthanded.
Yes, yes.
After all your experience in zips.
I'll write the deuce of seven in tournaments of buy-ins no more than $1.50. That'll be my contribution to the book.
Wow, talk about a niche market.
It'll be one of those little small ones that's it's in the grocery store checkout line, you know. You know, the 10 things your cat's trying to say to you, you know, and they sell them for $1, and while you're waiting for the jerkwad that's got 47 items in the 20 or fewer, and you're steaming, and you start flipping through it, and you're like, all right, I'll buy this. That'll be that book. That's where I'll sell it.
Hey, what is it that you call people, but you won't, you call them Jack somethings? What is it you call them? What do you say when you want to talk about an idiot?
Well, sometimes I call him Ass Jack.
No, but there was something else. You called him, like, Jack something.
Jack Nuts sometimes.
Yeah, Jack Nut. That's it. I wanted to call you a Jack Nut last night. There was a hand where I boated up, and you're like, damn, I would have won. And I was like, you wouldn't have. You're like, I would have made a flush. And I wanted to call you a Jack Nut, but I couldn't think of it.
Of course, I was distracted by my deuce to seven.
That's true.
Authoring. At the time, I didn't realize that you would have voted too, which would really hurt.
All right, so this last one I want to read because it comes from Ken Engstrock, and he's a chemist.
He's a chemist, and
he's calling me out. Now, you remember when I did the chips, and I'm not going to get into the whole chip standing story again.
Can we play that clip again, please?
We don't have all day, but you know, I was talking about maybe using acetone, you know, and then I said something about, you know, I didn't know what the chemicals would do to my hands or whatever. Maybe it would burn me or whatever. So he's like, dude, one, acetone contains no acid. I'm like,
why do they call it acetone then?
You know, I mean, I knew that it did have acid in it. But I didn't want to, like, you know, I didn't. So there's no acid in acetone. He says, acetone is safe to put on your hands. If it wasn't, do you really think they would sell it as the main component in some nail polish removers? When I dress up like a woman, I don't paint my nails, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you go kind of for the girl next door look. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like natural beauty.
Yeah.
So how would I know what acetone does? And then finally, he's like, three, if acetone is used to remove nail polish, it is reasonably, you know, just to assume that the ink that's on the chips or whatever could be taken off, the stickers could be taken off. So in his opinion, that would be the real reason for avoid treating them with acetone, not safety concerns. So ultimately I made the right decision. I just didn't have the education behind it.
Yeah. And we appreciate that Ken is a founding member of the Acetone Defamation League out there and setting the record straight on this non-acid chemical. I don't know what it is now. It's just there. Nail polish remover booster.
If you'd like to see these chips up close and personal and see what the hell it is I did to them,
yes,
please come on our cruise. Go to anteupmagazine.com/cruise for all the details on our October 25th trip to the Bahamas. It's just $2.99 a person, Scott.
That's $2.99.
But you got to book by August 19th if you want to guarantee that price.
That's right. After that time, we ship any... if we have any unsold cabins, we ship them back to the ship at that point, and then we book you at whatever the prevailing rate is. But I don't think we're going to have a lot of cabins left. We are at more than 25% capacity already.
Wow.
Just a couple weeks into this. Only two suites left in our entire group. So if you've got some rich podcasters out there that want to live it up, you better call me quickly. But another great thing that we can announce this week, Palm Gaming International has signed on to be one of our sponsors of the cruise. They're the ones that created those poker chips. And they are going to make a custom ceramic Anteup dealer button, one for every player on the ship.
That is so cool. I have to design this thing, right? I have to design it. I can't wait.
You don't have to. He designed something, but I think you're going to want to take a crack at it. But,
okay, I'll take a look at it.
But whatever he designed, he's going to put it on there. He just stamps it right on there.
That's cool.
And you know, he's the one that also provided the dealer buttons that we use already. The ceramic ones are nice. I mean, they are suitable to use as card protectors too.
Yeah, they are.
You know, they're not too big that you couldn't use it for that. So that's just one more of the free things on the cruise, including the Dom Baruch Sit and Go Strategy Course and that free open bar cocktail party. And we're still working on more free stuff. So, but if you're going to wait until you figure out everything I'm going to do, you're not going to make it on the ship. So, should be enough here for $2.99, right?
This is free stuff, people.
Free. I mean, after you pay the $2.99.
But, you know, no one else is getting it on the ship. They're not getting this stuff. Only the people who book through us are getting it, coming into our poker room. It's free.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to have those same 12-year-old girls come up to our poker room like they did on the last cruise and go, hey, how old do you have to be to come play poker? And you looked at them and like, I'm sorry, it's a private group. Like totally like you're Britney Spears' bouncer or something there. Hey, back away.
Step back, please.
Yeah, they would not have gotten the ceramic button.
No, nope.
They did not book with us. But again, it's antiupmagazine.com/cruise. When you're ready to book, give me a call. My number's on the page.
Very good. Okay, let's get on to our Antiup news desk.
The World Series of Poker has announced its 12-stop 2010-11 World Series of Poker circuit schedule. Begins in Council Bluffs, Iowa on August 19th and ends May 9th at Harrah's in New Orleans. This year's tour features a number of enhancements, including a cumulative points ranking, a season-ending national championship, four regional championships, and standardized structures and payouts throughout the series.
Wow, that's pretty wild. And I think they might even add stops, too. They even mentioned that, too. There could be more stops to come.
Could be.
Which is just insane. That's great. I mean, you know, more content for our magazine, baby.
yeah, I hope those standardized structures payouts get entered in the computer system correctly.
Yes, please.
Can kind of hose things up if not. But you know, they're really kind of boosting it up, you know, and I think they changed the main event buy-ins to some of the smaller events too, so it's a little more affordable. So
very good. All right, the World Poker Tour also has announced some changes for its next tour. Aside from Matt Savage being named the executive tour director, the WPT re-welcomes Kimberly Lansing in a new anchor job, and also the Royal Flush Girls, a cosmopolitan collection of women who will command plenty of airtime.
Yeah, they're creating. They're trying to do this throwback to the old days when they had like an anchor.
Yeah,
somebody like on the World Poker Tour newer's desk, you know.
Yeah.
Well, where Vince and Mike can throw it back to Kimberly.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works out. And then the Royal Flush Girls, they handpicked this collection, Chris.
Wow.
To kind of represent all of the nations of the world. So although they're all Americans, one of them is like fluent in Vietnamese. Another one has traveled extensively. And so it should be interesting to see what they do with the Royal Flush Girls.
And I bet they're ugly, too.
Yeah. None of them is a model.
Yeah, none of them are pretty.
All right, finally, fans can nominate one and only one person for the Poker Hall of Fame now through September 1st at www.worldseriesofpoker.com. After nominations end, finalists will be voted on by a yet undetermined media panel to see who joins poker's most exclusive club.
Okay, well, all right, well, we're going to nominate Tom McAvoy right now. I mean, the guy needs to be in the hall. I don't know what the big deal is. And I've actually petitioned to be on the panel more than once. I've actually sent an email recently, too. Haven't heard back yet. But I think I'm under consideration. So I'd like to get on that panel and get this guy in the hall.
Yeah. I think it'd be hard-pressed for anybody to say that he shouldn't belong in the hall. And we were trying to get him on the show today. He wants to. He's busy traveling. So hopefully we'll welcome Tom back on sometime soon. But you don't have to wait for him to be on the show.
Yeah.
Make him your nominee. So
yeah. I mean, he'll be on and plead his case, but let's do a preemptive strike here and just get the guy in the hall anyway.
Preemptive strike.
All right, our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, you get it. This one comes from our good friend Guy. He's in Brazil, and he relates to Scott's earlier problem from last week.
Yeah.
Hello, guys, from Antiup. This is Guy Kalil. I was just listening to the last episode, and you guys said that Scott, I think, played a tournament, and he left the tournament, and he cashed. And I was playing another site, not affiliated with AnyUp, a big site. And I was playing a 90-person satellite that costs $1 and gives a step one spot for $3.30, I think. And I registered for it in my office, and people got in my office. I forgot about that totally. And then I closed Full Tilt. And then when I opened it, I had like 20 chips left from the 300 we started, and the blinds were like 50 and 100 or something like that, and I got my ticket.
Well, you know, hey, you know, again, I think there should be a subclass of the Poker Hall of Fame.
Subclass.
For people who are able to win by not playing.
You're so good, you don't even have to be there.
Yes, yes. That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Well, that's what they'd say to you, too. If you're not there but to win, then you're not there to get into the hall either. Sorry.
They'd have the Hall of Fame, you know, induction ceremony and dinner, but I wouldn't show up.
No, you wouldn't show up, and you'd still get inducted.
Yeah, and I'd still get in, right? All right, well, you know, he said it's too expensive for us to set up some swag, but we pay no other mind to that. You're going to get some swag anyhow, but we will take the hint and not give you a prize that we have to actually send there. But we will hook you up with a $10 online staking package from getastake.com. You can use that without any postage.
Very good.
All right. You want me to track this mailbag? Whew.
Yeah. You know, I've got a comment about it, so I guess I'd like to have you read it.
I like to try to keep the mailbag short, but our good friend Nick Mariana. Did I get it right?
Close enough.
It's Mariana. Mariana, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
good.
It's like the woman from the hot one from Ginger's Island. Gilligan's Island.
From Ginger's Island.
Ginger's Island's totally different show.
Ginger's Island is the porn version of Gilligan's Island.
It's on a different network altogether.
The movie star. The porn movie star.
Oh, but Nick, our good friend from North Carolina, wrote in, and it's a little long, but stick with me, but the setup is important for us to discuss this. So he wants us to have a show, Chris, on mixed strategy. Now, I thought he thought meant mixed game strategy, but no. He says mixed strategy is one of the techniques used in game theory. What it comes down to is taking a random event to help you make your decisions at the table. He says he uses one that seems to help his game from being so predictable. And he gives us a for instance, Chris. For instance, in our home AA monthly tournament, I'm probably one of the nittiest players at the table. Ever since Mike Fausto got kicked out. We're at the 100, 200 blind level with a full table of 9 players. He's in middle position, folds to him. He tries his mixed strategy, Chris, looks down at 9 of spades, tray of spades, and the other random event tells him to make a play at this pot, so he raises to 600, folds all the way around, flop comes 9-9 queen, bets out, small blind shoves, he calls, and everybody's surprised that he played 9 tray in mid position. He ended up losing the hand. But that's not the point of the story, he says. The point is these guys now are having a hard time figuring out what I have because the mixed strategy allowed me to play a non-conventional way for me, and the darn 9-tray suited is now known as my hand.
Well, I suspect that you've put this in the mailbag because it's pretty obvious that we probably couldn't do an entire show on this.
Yes.
So here's my thing.
Well, we're going to be doing a correct show on Pod Odds, so I'm not going to try to get into game theory.
As I said last night in the chat, what are Pod Odds? here's the thing, and a lot of people probably already know about this, but Harrington, I think it was Harrington in his Hold'em, you know, his Harrington on Hold'em books.
Right, exactly. The watch, right?
Yeah, the watch. You look at the watch, and if you say to yourself, I want to bluff, and, you know, 80% of the time, then you look at your seconds and you say, okay, well, that means every, you know, whatever, every 10 seconds, whatever it is, 80% of 60. I'm not doing the math. Told you, I can't do pot odds. But, you know, let's say you've designated between 0 and 10 seconds as the moment that you're going to bluff. So if you look at your watch and it's not between there, you don't bluff that hand. But if it is, that's the mixed strategy. That's the hand where it's totally unpredictable and it's random. It's nothing to do with you. You look at your watch and, oh, wait, it's 05. I have to bluff now. And you do, you know, whatever. So that, I mean, that's a real simplistic way of saying it, but that's what he put in his books, the watch. Yeah, so you knew exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. In fact, I wrote back and I'm like, yes, I remember that. Because I remember that specifically from Harrington's books of all the things in there. And I guess the reason I remember is, one, because I am just like Nick, a nitty player.
Yeah.
And I need to find a way to be a little more aggressive and do things differently. And I like that tip from Dan. But what I caution people is that it's a good way to get started in randomizing your play. But I don't think you want to be doing that the rest of your life. I don't really think Dan Harrington looks at his watch.
No, probably not.
To figure out when he wants to make a play at a pot. Because, you know, a really good player can assess the entire table situation and know when the right time is without looking at his watch, right?
Right, or you have an internal clock that lets you, okay, it's been like 30 hands. This is probably a good time to do it, and I got the guy on my left who's pretty tight. So, yeah, exactly. But, and the other thing, too, some people may write it now and say, oh, but if you do the watch thing, every time you look at your watch, they're going to know you're bluffing. Aha, no. Because every time you look at your watch, you may not bluff. It depends on where the second hand is.
Ah, yes.
So that is not
foiled
true.
Them.
I am doing another preemptive strike. Do not write in and say that, because I have you covered.
All right, well, Nick, I hope that satisfies your desire for an entire show on mixed strategy. It was actually longer than probably our first show, right?
Probably, I think it was.
So it does constitute a show in one definition of a show. But if you're not happy with that, hopefully you'll be happy with a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Andy Up. And one more reminder, if you go to that wonderful website, ClassicPlayingCards.com, he's running a contest all month to win some of those very nice uncut sheets of his gorgeous cards.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the airline steward. We're at the 8160 level at a multi-table online tournament, and it folds around to me in the button, and I look down at Ace of Diamonds, Ace of Clubs.
I can't imagine it could be that easy.
I'm not going to screw around here. I'm going to make my 3x raise to 480, but I am aware that this may look like a button raise. I have 6200 to start the level. The small blind folds, but the big blind tanks for 15 seconds and then calls. He has 8,300 to start the level. The flop comes down 9 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds, and our big blind checks. This is not exactly a dry board, so I bet 3 quarters of the pot or 750 into the 1K pot. Our big blind opponent calls.
Surprising, to say the least.
The turn is the 8 of clubs, and the big blind immediately bets 1750 into the 2500 pot. Within split seconds, I click the time button. In the chat window, one of the players types check 10. So, what do you think?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
This seems like a very mailbaggy show, doesn't it? Already at this point, I mean, it's
what we'd call a reader appreciation show.
This is when we say, you know what, guys, we're giving back. It's like Idol gives back. You know, it's Annie Up gives back week, and we have so much correspondence with our listeners and our readers and stuff that it just piles up, and every once in a while we have to do a show. And this whole show has been reader friendly, man. I'm real happy with it, you know. It feels good to get all this stuff off my chest.
Yes, it does. And we have some good stuff piling up, you know, because, you know, we don't like to double swag people. But we get good stuff in that we want to talk about from our previous swag winners. So I save it, and then we bring back the mailbag show and get it in. So some of the stuff I've been aching to talk about.
Aching.
So here we go. And this first one, Chris, I have had an extensive back and forth with this listener about this issue. So I'm very interested to hear what you say, because even though we're friendly here,
right.
but I think we're driving each other crazy in this email communication we're having. So comes from our good friend Matt Moody, all the way out on the Pacific Coast, and he says he has a question regarding what exactly the poker room's responsibility of the players is and what the players' responsibility is in knowing that poker room's different rules. So here's what recently happened to him. He said to his left was a player who's very new to the game, and this was his first time playing in a casino experience. This being the first time, he was asking about anything he needed to know about this poker room, Chris, all right?
Uh-huh.
Later on in the session, Matt looks down at 9 of spades, 9 of clubs on the button. He has just $62 left. Action was raised to $4, re-raised to $15, re-raised to $42, and it gets to him, and he decides to go all in.
Okay, so, fold. Oh, wait, this isn't hand of the week?
Yeah, not near. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was hand of the week.
So after he shoves his 62 into the pot, the dealer looks at the bets on the table and says, sorry, there's already been 3 raises, and all Matt can do is call now. Now, Matt says, oh, he suffered some sick beats and horrid luck, but kept his cool until this. So he was saying things like, I've been there over 3 hours, and no one mentioned this. So, of course, the flop comes queen, 10, 9. He goes all in for the last 20, gets called by a person who raised the 42 bucks with king-king, turns a jack of clubs, giving a straight, and Matt's busted. As he's leaving, he's obviously steaming about not being informed of this rule. Manager tried to somewhat apologize to him by saying the rule sucks and blah, blah, blah. I mentioned the rule should be told to players before play starts. He tries to say some nonsense about not being able to explain all the rules. So my question to the greatest poker podcast duo, of course, you know, I'm down on his list a little bit now, probably, is, was this on me? Am I supposed to know every little rule, different nuance in the state I'm playing in, or is it on them to make sure I'm fully informed of any different rule? He says, I feel the room should either A, post the rules that are different for all to see, or B, make sure everyone that might not know the rules is at least given the opportunity to ask about the rule when play starts so everyone understands it.
Well, I think that I, too, am going to be down a little bit on his totem pole after I answer what I feel. I think that, you and I have had this situation where I had happen to me in a room around here where I had pocket queens and I wanted to go all in. They're like, no, you've had 3 raises already. And I'm like, it's no limit. No limit. There's no limit to what I can do. I don't understand. And but they made me pull back the money, and then I shoved after the flop anyway and quadrupled up. But I have to agree here that, yes, I think rules need to be posted in a room, all rules. But I can't expect the dealer to cite every rule every time a new player sits down or anytime any player sits down. How could you possibly ask a dealer to sit there and tell you that there's only 3 raises? You know what? Then he has to deem what's more important to tell you. Is it 3 raises, or is it the betting line that I tell you about, or is it the straddle rule for playing a cash game? You know what I mean? What is it that he has to tell you that will make you feel like you're completely informed that day? You know, so I don't know. I think that if you go into a room and somebody tells you that, then you learn, you live and learn. You know, and that's how you learn the rule. Or it should be posted, and you should ask, are the rules posted before you show up, and then go read them. But even then, it's going to be almost impossible to get all the rules posted. You know, they're going to have to put a poster up on the wall that's like 8 feet by 20 feet, you know, just to get all the rules on there anyway. So although I feel bad, I still think you were going broke anyway because the Kings wasn't going anywhere and you would have lost all your money anyway. But, you know, I don't think that it's on the dealer at all. And I understand when the manager says it's almost impossible to explain all the rules every time you sit down because there's no way. So I feel bad, and I hope that he's gotten his money back since, but really, I have to side with actually the casino here.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. You're in the same pool of blood that he has me in right now. But you know, I said a couple of things. I mean, like one, you know, I would leave a poker room if every time somebody sat down, the dealer was supposed to recite 47 rules.
Yeah.
Now, what Matt told me is like, you know, hey, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if there's a rule that's very odd or different, you would think the dealers would make an effort to let everybody know that. Yeah, I can see that, I guess. But you know, I also said there is a little bit on the player, particularly when you're in a new room or something like that. I always try to ask, usually at the brush, so I'm not making a big deal at the table. You know, hey, it's my first time playing in this room or the state. Are there any kind of weird rules or odd things that I should know about? You may not get that answer because it may not be weird to those people. So you can't guarantee it, but, you know, every once in a while someone might be able to say, hey, oh, yeah, yeah, we only have a three raise rule here or something like that.
Well, here's the other thing, too, Scott. He's playing No Limit, and you know as well as I do, in Cash Game No Limits, the people come and go, the turnover in those tables is remarkable. What do you expect every dealer to sit down and every time he sits down to the new down say the rules and say that rule? And then every time someone else joins a table to tell that person that rule? Let me tell you, when we played when I played in Vegas a couple weeks ago, and they had the Mississippi Straddle, and even when we were at Tunica and they had the Straddle, every single time the dealer would say, hey, there's a Straddle on the button. That means the dealer, small blind acts first. And you get tired of hearing him say it. But he has to keep saying it because people aren't paying attention. Normally, you know what I mean? But you get tired of hearing it. Imagine if you had to hear it every time somebody joined a table. Hey, there's only a three-raise rule at this table, and there's a betting line. And it would drive you crazy. It would drive you insane. And there's no way a dealer could ever know. Every single time a dealer sits down and they have to say that, it'd be crazy. So I agree that it's tough that you have a weird rule like that, but you really need to know the rules somehow before you sit down.
Well, and then my final point on this, too, I thought was maybe you disagree. You know, I've been playing Hold'em for years now, and this is only the second time I have ever heard of four raises in one round.
Yeah.
The first time was yours.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it doesn't happen that often, but No Limit, you don't normally get four raises in a round often. So it's not something that I think ever comes into play that often, at least often enough that it needs to be repeated considerably. And when it does come into play, it's essentially these two situations were very similar, right?
Very similar.
You know, you had a bunch of short stacks, and, you know, the final one is just getting it all in. So, you know, I just don't know how often it happens, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, no, good point. I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think we've handled this appropriately. Of course, we'll probably get some sort of bomb in the mail now. But
yeah,
hey,
so we'll have to take turns putting the point. Yeah. You get the first century tonight. I'll take the day one tomorrow.
All right. Well, our next one is actually, it's odd. We call it a mailbag show, but this is a clip that Mike James sent in to us, an MP3 audio clip. I like these kind of clips because you know the audio is going to be good. So let's see what he has to say.
Hey, Chris and Scott. Mike James and Brandon. And no, I'm not a super freak. I wanted to talk a little bit about blind structures in online tournaments. Now, I play a lot of live. And one of the things that happens in live tournaments is, as the blind structure goes up, they take away the smaller chips. So, you know, when your blinds are 1,000, 2,000, you've probably only got $500, $1,000, and $25,000 chips or something similar. Online, you don't have this restriction. And so I see both amateurs and pros, like Greg Raymer I know does this, will start making these odd-sized bets. The blinds are 1,000, 2,000, and they raise to $4,937. Now, at first this really bugged me. I do realize now it's a tell. It means that they're thinking about their hand, whether they're thinking bluff or they're thinking I've got a really good hand or I need the maximum suck-out value I can get. It still is a little strange to me. I very rarely do it. And when I do it, it's usually at the lower blind levels or if I'm very short-stacked and I'm trying to get the maximum value out of something. Just wanted to know what you guys thought about this unusual bet amounts when the blinds are so big and people are adding in, you know, and $42 at the end. Love the show, guys.
All right, I love this one, Greg.
Yeah, I know why you love it, because that's all you did last night in Apes. You were driving me crazy, and I kept wondering to myself, how are we betting with ones and threes when the blinds are like 2 and 400? What's going on? I said, Scott's got to be drinking.
No, actually, I was not drinking last night until after my boat got sunk by quads. But here's why I do it. And I thought this was a great lesson I learned from Greg Raymer at the WSOP Academy many years ago when you and I went. He sat down at our table during one of the tournaments, and he gave a couple pieces of advice. He said, one, he's like, when he sat down, he started checking everybody out. I think people were getting a little uncomfortable. Why is Greg Raymer staring at me?
Yeah.
And without the crazy Disneyland glasses. And so he said before anybody asked, he's like, you know, hey, when you sit down at the table, it's a good idea to take stock of everybody's chip stacks. So you know what everybody has, so you know when you get into a hand whether somebody has you covered or not, and maybe what some of the dynamics are. So great piece of advice, I thought, right?
Yeah.
The second piece of advice was he's like, during his betting, he's like, keep your short, small denomination chips. And people are like, what? He's like, it makes your stack look like it's bigger.
That's true.
And I'm like, you know what? It seems really simple, but psychologically, I imagine that works on a lot of people. If you look across the table and somebody's got 40 chips, and they're all dollar chips, it looks more menacing than if they have, you know, $8 $5 chips. Right?
Absolutely. This reminds me of when I was playing in the World Series 2007, and you showed up and you started playing Limit in the Amazon room. I look over and you had like a castle of white chips. And I'm like, what is he doing? And you had like, it was ridiculous. I'm like, oh my God, Scott's crushing that game. This is so awesome. I'm playing in the World Series. Scott's crushing that game over there. And then like 10 minutes later, you come over and I'm like, oh my God, dude, how much? You said, I won $3. I'm like, what? How did you win $3? And it's the same thing. You look at all those chips and you think you got a million chips and you're loaded. And actually, you only have like 3 or 4 over the buy-in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something to it. I mean, it's a small little detail, but you know, it if you get any edge at all, it's worth doing, right?
Yeah.
In poker. So that's why I do it. Now, I know people are out there, all right, Scott, you're not making any sense here. We're talking about online poker. No one can see your stacks. All right. So, but here's what I say is when you do those odd size bets online, and I always try to do like 9s or 4s, so you get those extra $4 chips in there. The actual physical representation of the stack or that bet on the screen looks big.
Yes.
All right? If I bet 100, it's going to put one black chip out in front of me,
right,
my avatar, right?
Right.
If I bet 99, there's going to be a crap load of chips in front of me.
All right, crap now, load.
Again, I don't think anybody – most people are so stupid to like, oh, my gosh, look at all those chips. Oh, my God, I can't call. I get somebody and I'm betting $1 less than I normally would, is it not worth doing? And add into the fact that it drives people insane and puts them on tilt, there's one more reason to do it, I think.
I tell you, as someone who sat on your left last night, it was a little confusing. I mean, I look at and I'm like, I have to call 584? That's not right. I'm going to have to fold. It was just weird. And then you're right, you do see like all these stacks when you bet him. I'm like, whoa, did he go all in? And then I look down and it's like 389. What the hell? And I really thought that you were just sort of like just making a fist and punching the number, you know, and just whatever came down when you were betting, because it was
that's good. I like it.
It was insane. I'm like, what is he betting? And I was like, all right, whatever. I'm just gonna fold unless I got the nuts. And then when I did have the nuts, I shoved. Other than that, It was kind of perplexing, you know, and I understand. And I actually thought, too, like maybe when Raymer does it online, he's actually betting precisely 2/3 the pot. Or, you know what I mean? He's just so smart that he can actually do that. But it is kind of bizarre. It is bizarre that you can bet, you know, in the single digits like that. It's weird. But you were doing it all night, and I was just like, he's got to be drunk.
Nope, not drunk. Just annoying.
That's one and the same, buddy.
All right, our next one comes from Kirby in Portsmouth, Virginia. And he says, I was wondering what you guys think is the best strategy when you're in a free roll tournament and all the players are sitting out except one other person who has more chips than you and is sitting on your left. With all these empty seats, it's clearly early in the tournament, and the question seems to be survival versus doubling up. If I fold a lot of hands, I run the risk of losing some chips, but the rest of the table will blind out before me. Play only premium hands? Villain will probably fold. Play the normal, more aggressive heads-up way and pray that I win most races? I don't know. What do you say, Chris?
Well, I think that I would definitely treat it like a heads-up situation. The other people are not coming into play. So you're really just playing that one guy or that one player at that moment. I would definitely open up and take all of those free chips, that dead money that's out there when they're in the blinds, and play this guy heads up, and you know, eventually someone's going to come to the table because you're either going to knock this guy out or the field's going to shrink somewhere else and you're going to get moved. So take advantage of it while you can and be aggressive. I would definitely be aggressive and play this person as if I was playing heads up.
Yeah, and what makes this a letter a little different than normal is you got the guy directly on your left.
Yeah.
Normally, it seems like it happens is you guys are opposite side of the table, and you know one guy takes one set of blinds, the other guy takes the other set of blinds. Every once in a while, you'll tangle in a hand together if you both got something. But you kind of have that implied collusion going on. But when you're right next to each other, you don't have that ability. So you got to get in there. And more to his point about I was thinking, I found myself this in a free roll not too long ago. Maybe it was Apes. I don't know. You know, I was thinking what he was thinking. You know, hey, if I can get this other guy's chips,
you can
knock him off the table.
Yeah.
Until somebody gets moved in, which usually always happens. You know, the rest of the chips are mine.
Yeah.
Until somebody comes in, so you know, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm being the jerk. But in a free roll, I might start pushing my edges pretty hard here to try to get that guy, you know, knock down my last opponent, right?
Absolutely. And it's a free roll, you know, and you know, there aren't very many opportunities for something like this to happen. So if it's going to happen, take advantage of it. That's a great point. Get that guy out and take all the chips.
Be greedy. Greed is good. I learned that from Gordon Gekko.
There's a sequel to that coming out, I heard.
Yes, they delayed it, though. I'm a little upset because it's upset.
Okay, this one comes from Zach from Israel. He says he has a question that he doesn't know if we've ever addressed. How best to select a table? When I log on, I see a bunch of different tables at the level I want to play. How best to decide which one to sit at? I've been looking for empty tables on the theory that if I'm opening a new table, then I will have the max stack size and won't sit down with someone who has a huge stack.
Well, that is a very good strategy, I think, if you don't want to be against a huge stack. I mean, one of the advantages of online is you can actually pick your table.
Right.
You know, if you're going to a live casino, I mean, you sit down and want to ask for a table change. But, I mean, you know, that's really a huge edge to mine on online is table selection. So, so I guess what I wrote back to him is, yeah, if you're worried about somebody outstacking you, I mean, looking for new tables when everybody's got the same, that's probably a way to go. You could be sitting there waiting a while to get a table going or playing shorthanded, right?
Yeah.
So I guess you got to consider that. But
exactly. It all depends on what you're looking for that day. If you want to play at a full table, it's not going to happen because if you're starting a table, you're not going to have a full table right away and you're going to play instantly heads up with somebody. So it just depends on what you're looking for. I know when I play, I almost always am looking for like two players at a table. I love playing three-handed. I love playing heads up, but I don't necessarily play heads up a lot. But when I do, you know, I'll play for, you know, medium stakes. But I'm always looking for like two or three players. I don't ever want to play at a full table, and I'll never sit down at a nine-handed table. I always play six-handed or fewer, and I'm hoping that it's one or two. So I don't really care about how much the money they have. I just want to play hands, and I just want
right.
to
yeah.
stack somebody myself. So I don't really care about the amount. It just depends on you and what you want. You know, and I agree that sitting down at an empty table, you're going to start evenly with everybody. And I love doing that live. I love sitting at a live table because I know I'm going to have to play nine-handed, and I know I'm going to, you know what I mean? So I love starting a table live, but online, I never do it because, again, you're just going to, if you're going to want to play heads up, if you don't want to play heads up, there's nothing you can do to avoid it because someone's going to sit down with the same stack as you. So it just depends on what you want.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't play a lot of cash games online anymore, but what I used to do, though, was I used to, like, look at the stats down the side on percentage of people seeing the flop.
Yeah.
Which would show you how active a table might be, too. So, I mean, if you're looking for a passive table you can run over, I always pick the lowest percentage to the flop table. And if I wanted to be tight and, you know, get my money against people that I thought were crazy, then I'd go to a higher percentage table.
Yeah, and I always look for pot size, too. If they're big playing for big
that's
pots,
true.
And
that's
I don't
true.
Think they're good players, and I want to sit them and try to win big pots with them. So hey, just make sure you analyze it to what you want to do that night.
Yeah, very good. All right, well, here's our final one of our mailbag this week. A little layered here. It's like the Double Jeopardy two-parter. So stay with me here, Chris.
Okay.
All right, it comes from Dan Matofsky. Matisoff. Why can't people just be named long? Four simple letters. People just go crazy with all these extra letters in the name. They don't need it.
Matisoffsky. Yeah, there you go.
All right. He says there's a betting line on the table, but it's not enforced in the tournaments. In one hand, a couple players limp before he gets the player who I will call the villain. He says raise, grabs his whole stack, moves it past the betting line, and the next player mucks. The villain sees this and starts dropping chips and makes a min raise. All right, so Dan asked if the betting line was in effect, because if it was, then that whole stack would have been the raise, but that's when the dealer confirmed that the betting line was not in play. So the player that mucked said he thought the stack was the bet, and that's why he mucked. So that player clearly made a mistake acting so fast and should have asked a question I did before acting. But in any case, the way the villain waited before dropping chips clearly was an angle shot in my view. After that, I was watching him very closely, like a hawk! All right, he says, there was a later hand where it came down to three players. The villain is the small blind, makes a small bet on the turn. Player one goes all in. Player two stops to think. The villain checks his cards, then holds between his fingers like he wants to muck. This looked odd to me. To make matters worse, he starts moving his hand up and down like he can't wait to get rid of those cards. Player two doesn't seem to see any of this, but finally decides to muck. And that's when the villain insta-calls and tables the nuts.
Oh, my God.
So Dan says, do these actions seem reasonable, or is this angle shooting? In the first case, the villain takes knowledge about the betting line to let him move chips and sees reactions before committing his chips. And second, he's trying to influence player two's decision with false information. He says this could be like inverse bluffing, but fake mucking seems to be too active to be fair play.
Oh, okay. The first case is weird, okay? Clearly this... Well, I don't want to say clearly, but there. You watch poker on TV, and guys get away with murder with their betting. It's like if you go to Derby Lane,
right?
They clearly tell you during a tournament and during cash games, any money that goes to that line or past it is in the pot, no matter what.
Right.
And then you watch on TV, and guys say raise, and they always seem to bring out a stack of 20. Put out 5, 5, 5, and then put 2 on top, and then pull them back and bet 17 chips or something. Yeah. And it happens every single day in every single card room in every single casino around the world. And it's ridiculous. You need to have a rule in place. And if the if this is what the guy is doing, and you didn't know that ahead of time, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't know if the first instance is angle shooting, because if it's accepted play in the room and that's just the way people bet because they want to feel like they're on TV and put a whole stack out there and cut them and not say, you know what I mean, because that's what they do on TV. You don't hear these guys saying an amount. They just do it and bring chips back, which is bull, but they do it all the time. So if that's acceptable play in the room, then he's not angle shooting there. The second one, he's probably angle shooting, but it's also on the other player to act the way he wants to act and not to act because of what this guy's doing on his left.
Right.
So he may be trying to angle shoot. I mean, I like to bring this up all the time. Sometimes, and I bring this up to Faso all the time, Faso sometimes will grab his stack to try to keep you from betting or to let you know, I'm going to call whatever you bet.
Right.
And that's the same kind of thing. He's doing something to make you see before you act what he may do. Is it an angle shoot? Maybe. Is it really just I'm fed up with Scott Long raising with deuce six and I'm going to do the dog and pony show for the rest of the home game here to see? Yeah, maybe it's that too. So I still think it's on the other player in this second instance to do what that player wants to do and not be influenced by what this guy's doing with his cards between his fingers, maybe might fold or whatever. So I do think this guy is a scumbag.
Yeah, right. We can agree on that, right?
Yeah, and he's kind of like an angle shooter, but it's still on the other players to act accordingly and do what they want to do before this guy gets to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, I'm going to say that this neither of these cases is angle shooting. Both cases are four-alarm Deutsche banking.
Deutsche banking.
And there's a difference. I mean, an angle shoot is kind of taking advantage of a rule in a way that's not being enforced. If there's betting lines not being enforced, you can't blame a guy for doing this.
Right.
Now, I mean, obviously, those of us that like to play by the quote-unquote rules get frustrated with these people. And you're never going to see me take a big stack of chips, take it across the line, and drop one or two in. You know, and my guess is you're not going to see Dan doing that either. So we get frustrated when we see people do it, and we immediately say it's an angle shoot. It's not. It's just being a Deutsche Bank.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy's just being a jerk.
And the second one is the same way. I mean, I guess if we're going to call that an angle shot, you got to call what you say Fassel does an angle shot. You got to call anything that Joe Navarro sees at a table an angle shot. I mean, anything. If you're looking at your opponents and you're trying to get a read on them, and you're looking at somebody and they're patting their cards, you're like, okay, he's folding. Yeah, it's not an angle shoot. I mean, you're trying to be observant. You got to make your own decisions on what it is. Now, obviously, the next time this guy does it, you know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's really all about observation. But so the first time, you know, you're going to be upset. But it's the second time that matters more.
I totally agree. And I hate it that there's that betting line and it's not enforced.
Right.
You know, exactly. Or it's so strictly enforced that it's like gulag. You know, and just, so it's and I don't even really know what that means. I just said it out loud.
It's a great word though. I love it.
But
I had it as an appetizer last night.
Did you have it with the cocktail sauce?
I did.
It was really great. Good. But Dan, I can understand your frustration. I just don't think these are angle shoots.
Yeah, but I think we also could agree any room that has a betting line and calls it decoration, which I've actually heard a manager tell me that.
Oh my God.
It's just there for decoration. Those are the people that we need to take outside and yank their toenails out for. You got a line on the table, enforce it. If it's there to be pretty, you know, open a poker room in a beauty salon, you know.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Quite the international show today, Chris. We had letters from Australia, Israel, our Apes winners from Canada.
Yeah.
Probably even has some Americans in there. I mean, Michigan, that's a foreign country. So our hand of the week comes from Germany,
wow.
Munich, to be exact, from Danny, D-A-N-I. I'm going to assume that's a woman. Can I?
Well, here's the thing. No, you can't.
I cannot? Okay.
No, because there's a
player. I'm being an ugly American by doing that?
No, well, there's a player that's really, really good player, online player and live player named Donnie, but he spells it D-A-N-I. He was on that 2 months, 2 million show.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So he spells it D-A-N-I, so I wouldn't assume anything here.
All right. Well, I just know when I was in fourth grade, there was this totally hot girl named Danny, D-N-I, and she moved away, crushed my heart. So as I'm reading this hand, that's who I'm going to be thinking of.
Can you a know, girl in fourth grade?
Not as fourth grader.
Really be totally be hot? Yeah, that's pretty sad, man.
I'm going to be thinking of her, you know.
As an adult, I hope.
14 years later, you know, maybe 18 or 19. I mean, not 38 or 39 now.
Oh, my God, dude.
I have a medium. Right?
You need to just start the hand, buddy. You're getting yourself into a lot of trouble here.
All right, Danny Donnie from Munich. He was playing. It's as an Omaha high-low hand in an eight-game mixed multi-table on Stars.
All right,
so it's in the rotation of eight games. It's a $2.20 buy-in. And remember, when you have these eight game mix, it's six handed. All right.
Yeah.
And he says, this kind of plays into your discussion about a shorthanded poker book. So see,
yes,
we're tying everything together in one show.
And this
we'll
is my favorite
to talk about next week.
And this is my favorite game on Stars too. The eight
Isn't
game
it?
Mixed. Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were going to say, well, high low and I was going to laugh.
Well, no, eight game mix though. I love playing eight game mixed.
All right, so here we go. We are a dealt 10 of clubs, jack of spades, jack of clubs, eight of diamonds, under the gun.
Fold.
I agree.
Thank
Next
you.
Hand.
It's high low. It's high low. It's a platinum rule. Play a hand that can scoop, especially if you're under the gun. Even though it's not really under the gun because it's six-handed. Man, I'd get rid of this hand.
All right, now in his setup, his or her. I remember, I'm going to say her, right? Because I'm
okay.
Still
let's just say her, and when we're wrong, we'll correct it next week.
Danny, always unsure. He says always unsure how to play high only hands in Omaha 8. And as you said,
throw them away.
But he also says it's a pretty tight table. So you know that plays into it. So you know, when I first saw this, I initially said, "Fold, get out of there." I mean, what is this? It's not even a great high only hand.
I know.
You got the Jack 10. it's suited. You know, the 8, I guess you could make another straight there. There's got some potential there, but not when you're under the gun.
Yeah, I mean, you're not thinking those pocket jacks are going to win the hand, so...
Right.
Unless you flop top set, and even then, you got to be careful. So, really, I would just got to go.
But, you know, then when he says it's a tight table, maybe. It depends on how tight is.
Yeah, and if it's tight and they play with you...
everything, then... Yeah. Then, you know, I might take a shot. But here's the other interesting thing about this hand that I have not... disclosed until now, our hero has 1,028 in chips left, and we are at the 40-80 level.
Okay.
So the raise is to 160, which is more than 10% of our stack. Of course, his limit's a little different than no limit, you know, what you get into those percentages. But to me, I mean, for all the other reasons that we want to fold this, the biggest one for me now is I'm committing more than 10% of my stack on a very speculative hand.
Yeah.
If I had a stack like somebody else at this table that was like 5,000, I might be able to justify this depending on my Pabst Blue Ribbon count for the night.
Exactly. And, you know, knowing that it is the 8-game mix, you're going to have a no limit and a pot limit round coming up soon. If you're so short stacked like that, you're going to want to play premium hands till you get to that point. So that way you'll have a chance to double up or double through, because you really aren't going to double up or double through playing at this blind level with Jack-Jack 10-8. So I would just get rid of it and focus on premium hands while I'm short-stacked until I can get it all in a pot limit or no limit situation. You know, it's I just would get rid of this hand altogether. And like I said earlier, if you raise in a tight table and somebody calls you, then your Jack-Jack is dead or probably facing somebody who did play both ends, a high and a low. You know, so you're just asking for trouble.
Right. Okay. Well, regardless, it's a hand of the week, so it is raised. We get two folders, a caller on the button, the small blind folds, and the big blind calls. So three-handed, so we got rid of half the field.
Right.
And we see a flop of three of diamonds, nine of clubs, queen of clubs, and it is checked to us.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I know we're open-ended and we've got second pair.
Open-ended straight flush.
Right. So I'm going to have to bet. It's just, I just don't like being in this situation. But yeah, open-ended straight flush. So I'm going to bet, obviously, because I like my chances of making a straight or a flush here. But yeah. The problem is if you make the flush, if it's not the straight flush, you could still be behind.
Yep. You know, a couple things about this flop now. I mean, this is why we don't play those hands pre-flop.
Right.
You know, I get this a lot. Well, you know, I'll take a shot. But it's not the pre-flop action. It's the fact that you get a flop that sucks you into the rest of the hand.
Yep.
It's almost impossible to fold this hand now.
Yep.
Because you got so many ways of improving it. So you're going to be stuck to this hand now. And if you get all the way to the river and you don't improve, you're going to go, what? Huh? What happened? Because you're not going to have any chips left. And you're going to think back to that, oh, I'll take a shot with Jack-Jack 10-8.
Yeah.
But the other thing I like about this hand, besides just our monster draw here, is that there's only one low card. So you got to bet here and try to get those ace deuces and those people out.
Yep.
And hopefully, you know, have a shot of, you know, isolating for your high, right? So so that's exactly what our hero does. Bets out. And everybody calls, though. So we can't get anybody out.
Okay. So now this scares the hell out of me. Really, because if to
you
me...
You didn't have any hell in you because you've been teaching Father Paul how to bowl.
Really, though, let's look at this for a second now. Two callers. Now you have to start to narrow the hands. All right? Who would have called my raise preflop? Somebody with ace, deuce? Okay, so maybe they have ace, deuce of clubs. Mm-hmm. All right? Or ace, deuce, and an ace in a club and another club in their hand. So, all right, right there... That tells us that we have to make the straight flush to have the flush be good. Or we have to hope like, you know, one of our outs obviously is in our hand too, the 8. So right. We have to hit, what it is, 7 outs now to make a straight. And, you know, so now we're hoping the straight hits. And if it does hit, we can't really force anybody to out because, you know, it's limit. So I here's another reason not to play this freaking hand. But... anyway, someone else could have middle set, you know, nines, and that's why they only called. And if the board pairs, you're screwed. So
bottom set.
Right, or bottom set, and that, you know, because they could have had like ace, deuce, tray, tray or something. Who knows? So we may need to hit just the straight and have it hold up for us to even feel confident at all.
Yeah, and then there's an outside chance that even that straight we could be splitting the pot. I mean, although we got two jacks in our hand, but, you know, it's just rough. But, yeah, I mean, you got to discount any low hand staying around unless they're stupid, which I guess you can never discount stupidity.
That's true.
Or they have other cards that are going high. So, yeah, I think we're in a lot of trouble here. All right, the turn is the tray of spades. So our board now is tray of diamonds, nine of clubs, queen of clubs, tray of spades. I don't believe this is a hand card we wanted to see. And it's checked to us.
Even if we make our straight now on the river, it's like the 478th nuts.
Yep.
It's terrible. I feel bad.
There's probably going to be a boat that's knocked out by quads. I mean, you never see that.
You know? Ever.
But it is possible, I guess.
I'm checking behind. There's no way I'm betting.
I mean, really, at this point, now we're hoping for our straight flush draw to get there, right?
Right.
All right, so we check. It is bet out by the button, and the other guy calls.
We have to fold, and we sit in the corner for 20 minutes and repeat to ourselves over and over again, we will not play Jack-Jack 10-8 in Omaha 8. I'm folding here.
I'm
trying to hit is a straight for the 50th nuts, I have to get out.
Well, I mean, really, you're going for a two-outer. You went to straight flush. That's about the best thing you can hope for.
Exactly.
Here.
And
it's
even
not
if,
straight so much, you know.
You know?
Hit your straight flush, you got the nuts. But yeah. A two-outer.
Yeah.
We certainly don't have the outs for that. I mean, I guess the decision here is we have committed, 240, so we are down to below 800 now.
Yeah.
We are the short stack at the table. Of course, it's a multi-table, too, so you don't know where we are. But still in the limit thing. Yeah, you know what? I can't find a reason to call now. I really did think we were pot committed in this hand, but I don't believe we are now.
No, because you still have 10 big blinds.
Hmm.
And when you get the pot limit or the no limit, you could easily double to 1600 and then move on. So,
yeah, you got a couple
go.
Rotations to get there, though. So, I mean, you gotta,
I know, but even so, I'm still letting it go.
All right. Well, I'm going to agree with you, but our hero calls, which makes it a hand of the week, correct?
Yes, it does.
All right. So, the river, we get the eight of hearts. So, it's the tray of diamonds, nine of clubs, queen of clubs, tray of spades, eight of hearts. So we hit our straight, bingo, bango. No.
No, not bingo, bango.
But at least our hand is a hand now. It was just pocket jacks. Now at least we have a straight. The guy who checked last time checks out to us. I'm not even going to ask what we do here, right?
I check.
Right. And just, if we check and there's a bet and it's just single bet back to us.
Well, I'd have to call there just because of the pot odds. But if we check and then the guy bets and the other guy check raises, then we know we can get away from it. But I'm calling one bet here, but I'm not betting out and opening the betting up to someone else with a boat or quad. So forget it.
Yeah. All right. Well, a hero does put that bet in. Playing aggressive.
Wow.
And get this, the guy who led the action on the flop folds.
Okay.
On the turn, I mean.
Oh, yeah, right.
But our other opponent does call.
Well, that's not good. Maybe he's got ace three and he's made three of a kind or something, you know. But it feels like a full house, though, you know, but not a good full house.
Hmm.
Or maybe, I don't think somebody has jack 10 because we have jack in our hand, so it doesn't seem like they'd have jack 10 in their hand. But maybe you do. Maybe they're splitting the pot. I don't know. But obviously, a low didn't get there, so. It's either a weird full house, like...
It has to be a low full house, because he wouldn't check.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like... It could be pocket nines, but that doesn't seem right either, because he wouldn't check.
I don't know about that. I think it's going to be a tray, you know, a tray nine, or...
Yeah.
Which would make sense, because that'd be bottom two pair on the flop.
Yeah.
You don't want to get too excited about it, and then you boat up, and you're like, all right, I'll play cautiously, which is what he did. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. It could be something like ace-queen, tray, deuce, or ace-queen... King Trey, or you know, or something like that, where they had like a low draw, but actually flopped two pair and then turned a boat, but it's not the best boat because someone with nines pocket nines could have a bigger boat than your queen. So it could be something like that, too. But I don't think we're ahead, that's for sure. I don't think we won this hand.
All right. Well, at least I'm happy that we didn't get raised.
Yeah, that's true.
So we ended up putting in as much money as that we thought that we would allow ourselves to, though I think we would rather check it down. And had to be checked, obviously, it would have got checked down, right? Because the other guy folded.
Yeah, the guy folded, so.
All right, well, showdown. Of course, we have our straight eight to the queen. Our opponent shows queen of hearts, king of hearts, deuce of spades, tray of clubs.
Yeah, that makes sense. He had a suited king, queen, and he had two low cards, which if an ace comes on a flop, he's got the nut
big
low.
Big blind, yep.
And the big blind. And defending his blind, flops two pair. Two. Yep, flops a two pair. And
yeah, start with 2,100. Yeah, it was probably a loose call off the raise, pre-flop, but, you know, not a bad one.
Yeah, I mean, if he's in the blind, that means that, there was 160, 100, 320, 400 in the pot, and all he had to do is call 80.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, I mean, deuce tray is so overplayed in Omaha 8. Everybody's like, oh, if an ace comes, I got the low. But it's not. I mean, right. You still got to get your other low cards there.
Right.
And you probably killed a high, you know.
Yeah.
In this case, I mean, the best card for this guy to come would be the ace of hearts, because now he's got the nut flush draw working.
Right.
And the nut low. But, you know, I would probably fold that hand pre-flop. But it doesn't make sense then, because he flops two pair, but not top two pair.
Right.
And then boats up, but it's not a boat that you're too comfortable with. So you're fine just check calling and taking the pot, and boom.
Yep. Hmm. Yep. Wow. Well, again, you know, and Scott, have you had this moment lately where you're at the table and you look at a hand and you say to yourself, you know, this is the kind of hand I can get in trouble with, but I call anyway?
All the time.
And then you look back and go, hey, didn't I say that I can get in trouble with that hand? And I did. Why? And you still play the hand. And it seems like this is that situation.
Absolutely.
This is the hand you get in trouble with, and look what happened. You got in trouble. And I'm assuming that he didn't go very far in his tournament after that, because he was down to, what, 600?
Yeah, pretty much nothing left. We did not get the post-log, so we don't know what happened.
But we do know that he won something.
Or she. Remember, I still think it's that cute little Danny Strom that moved to Jacksonville and broke my heart. You know, I never looked her up now that I'm in Florida. She might be a neighbor now.
There you go. She may have been playing at the same table as you and you didn't even know it.
Could have. Well, thanks for sending in the hand and bringing back great elementary school memories. And we will send you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro. And this is important because it's a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games.
Very good.
Like the 8 game. And it comes from the good folks at element26.net. That's element26numeral.net. Check that out. And Danny, Donnie, I hope you enjoy it. And you can use it to get even better at the 8 game mix, which is a very fun style of play.
Well, thanks to the listeners today, because they made our show. That was probably the most feedback and exchange we've ever had easily with contributions from our listeners. So thanks very much for sending in those letters. I had a lot of fun answering those questions, and hopefully we helped out a few people there. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hey, do me a favor.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of the popping noise from you. Ooh, like, I think, is the mouthpiece close to your mouth? Like, too close? And then the other thing, too, is a couple of times you got really loud, and I totally lost you.
Oh, yikes, okay.
But when you came back on, it still made sense, so I'll just have to edit the quietness out. Well, you know what I mean. It's normal. I didn't have to make you redo anything. But I don't know what it is. I don't know if you're maxing out or if your mic is shutting off because you're getting loud in some points. I don't know what it is. But
weird. All right. Well, I'll move the mic down a little bit.
Yeah, try to move it away from your face a little. Okay.
Whispering like this is kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that. But, you know, I'm doing it so that when I see it in the editing process, I know what it is. And this is sick that you're giving me an 08 hand.
Yes, isn't it?
Oh, my God.